The coronavirus dominated the news this year, and that's why there were a lot of other science stories in 2020 that you might have missed. Let's take a look at some of them with Laura Helmuth, editor-in-chief of Scientific American. Laura, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And because of the coronavirus, it was a pretty tough year here on Earth. So why don't we start this segment in space? What do you think was the most important space story of the year, in your opinion?
Oh, yeah. It's a really good idea to look beyond our planet for a while. It's been such a tough year. But there was a lot going on in space. I think one of the big ones that didn't get as much attention as it might have is there's a decade-long mystery that was basically solved this year, and that is the mystery of fast radio bursts. So these are very fast, hence the name, very bright, energetic radio flashes that have been coming from, you know, billions of light years away, and astronomers have been detecting them for about a decade, and they didn't know where they come from. But then this year, they were looking at a dying star, a magnetic neutron star in our own galaxy, and they recorded a signal that looked just like a fast radio burst. And so they were finally able to tie these phenomena together and say that fast radio bursts are coming from magnetars, these intensely magnetic neutron stars that are all over the universe. And so it's a mystery that finally got solved, and it's kind of cool.
A couple other recent space stories that caught my attention. SpaceX, the company founded by Elon Musk, launched people to the International Space Station for the first time. Why was that a big deal?
Well, it was a big deal that it worked. There was, of course, a little bit of nervousness about that because the private space industry has been developing very quickly. It's one of these sort of experiment quickly, see what works, see what doesn't. And sometimes what doesn't work is things blow up on the launch pad. So it was very good news when the astronauts arrived at the International Space Station successfully. And it's also, you know, this seems to be the way forward for crewed space missions, partly because they're so expensive. It's really hard for NASA to do it on their own. And so they've been creating these partnerships with SpaceX and some of the other private space companies. And it seems like that's where spaceflight is going.
No. There were also some missions to asteroids by Japan, but also by NASA. Tell me about those missions and what scientists were hoping to learn by going to asteroids in space.
Yeah, it's been a really good year for asteroids. So Japan's Hayabusa 2 mission, it went to an asteroid named Ryugu. It blasted into the asteroid and sent a capsule to scoop up a bunch of, you know, dust and rocks and sent it back to Earth. And it landed in Australia, and scientists from Japan's Aeronautical Administration picked up the capsule, recovered it, brought it back to Japan, opened it up, and it is indeed full of asteroid bits. And, you know, one of the reasons that you want to bring back rocks from distant outer space is to understand what the solar system is made out of, what are the basic ingredients of the universe in really pristine asteroids, you know, things that haven't been transformed so much as the rocks on Earth have been. And then NASA, its OSIRIS-REx mission has been studying an asteroid named Bennu. It's been there for a couple of years. And just this year, it popped into Bennu and exploded a bit off of it and scooped up some material from Bennu. And it's going to send that back to Earth. It's working on that now. And we're hoping in 2023 to get a sample of Bennu that we can study.
One of the most important stories of 2020, of course, is the outpouring of grief and anger after the killing of George Floyd by police in Minneapolis. That launched the start of a new movement for racial justice and for equality. Of course, that's not a science story on the face of it. But I know from your perspective, that actually is a science story. Could you explain that?
Science has been reckoning for a while, and especially this year, with the biases that persist. There's been some really, really effective and inspiring social media campaigns. It's been like Black in Neuroscience Week or Black in Engineering, Black in Geoscience, Black Birders Week. And it's been really heartening to see these communities sharing support, sharing mentorship, and advocating for one another. And then also in the middle of the year, in June, there was a shutdown STEM and a shutdown academia movement to encourage all these institutions that are involved in science and engineering and technology to, you know, stop what they're doing and spend a day focusing on systemic racism and how to be anti-racist. And of course, you know, it's an ongoing project, but I think thanks to the Black Lives Matter movement, I think a lot of people in science are paying more attention and trying to think more actively about how they can fix things.
I want to ask you about a story that came to light for many of us in November when Oregon voters approved a ballot measure that legalized psychedelic mushrooms in a therapeutic setting. Tell me more about this. Did the supporters of that proposition or ballot measure make a convincing case for the science? What do we know?
The Oregon example is interesting because they specifically laid out a legal framework for legalizing psychedelics for therapeutic use, and not just by MDs who do have, you know, some access to drugs that, you know, otherwise are controlled, but to set up a way for therapists who aren't MDs, who are, you know, treating patients with depression, with post-traumatic stress disorder, dealing with end-of-life care. The evidence just keeps growing. Johns Hopkins has a new institute or a new center that's looking at psychedelic drugs and how they can be used therapeutically. And it's been hard to study because the drugs are you know, have been so controlled and illegal. But there's more and more evidence that a lot of people are really benefiting from treatment with psychedelics.
People might have thought they were under the influence of psychedelic mushrooms when they read the murder hornet story.
Yeah.
Large invasive hornets were found in Washington state. I spoke with a scientist who went and examined and tried to destroy the first nest there in a tree in Washington state. Why is this on your list of top science stories this year?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it captured people's imagination. I mean, murder hornets is a great name, but it's scary. Just the concept of being bitten by an inch and a half long, you know, the largest hornet in the world, if they should get loose and start stinging people. I mean, it's a really painful bite. So there's that. But, you know, they're huge and they have these, you know, really powerful jaws and they behead honeybees. They'll go into a hive of honeybees and just chop all their heads off.
Wow.
And so, you know, it could be a big problem for the honeybee, you know, for pollination, for honey. You know, we have so many invasive species and they cause all kinds of problems. You know, we've had die-offs of trees. There's invasive mussels that are disrupting the Great Lakes and, yeah, new invasive species all the time. But for some reason, murder hornets is the one that's really kind of helped people understand how scary it is to have a new species come in that we have no defenses against that can cause all kinds of pain and destruction.
And while we have you, for the first time in its 175-year history, Scientific American endorsed a presidential candidate this year. Of course, that was Joe Biden. Why did you do that? And what do you hope to see from the Biden administration when it comes to science when he takes office in January?
Yeah, we did our first presidential endorsement in 175 years. Our endorsement was based strictly on science issues, looking at the Trump administration's just, you know, catastrophic management of the coronavirus pandemic, of climate change, the sharing of misinformation, just the way that the White House has been amplifying conspiracy theories and kind of questioning reality throughout the 4 years, but especially in this past year. So, yeah, that's why we endorsed Biden. We're so relieved that he won. But we do have very high expectations. Some of the most urgent issues that his administration faces are about science. So clearly controlling the pandemic, and that's something that you have to use the best evidence at every stage, you know, for deciding what kind of behaviors to encourage, you know, how to distribute vaccines most effectively, what kind of drugs to approve. All these things are really science, you know, reality, evidence-based questions. And then climate change. I mean, that's, you know, as deadly as the pandemic potentially. It's just over a longer time frame, and we've lost so much time, and Trump undid so many good Obama-era, you know, attempts to control climate change and protect the environment in other ways. So the Biden administration needs to both, you know, clean up the mess that Trump administration made and make up for lost time. But he needs to go way beyond that to really start to make a difference on climate.
Well, and people listening to this might be asking, why did it take you so long to talk about climate change and about the pandemic and the coronavirus? We're going to dedicate separate segments to that entirely. Laura Helmuth, editor-in-chief of Scientific American, with the top science stories of 2020. Laura, thank you so much, and happy holidays to you.
Thank you, and happy 2021.